Hi, this is Rich, aka the Polish guy. Here in Ohio, it's swampier than Dagobah in the rainy season, but you can just stay comfortably inside and enjoy listening to Ice Cave Radio, featuring Flake, Doa, and Charmer.
Welcome, friends, to episode number 44 of Ice Cave Radio. Flake, Doa, Charmer, whole gang is here to talk about Star Wars Unlimited. That's a podcast that we do, but we talk about other Star Wars card games as well as all the culture and all the fun. We typically
we
do.
We don't really anymore. Like I feel like we did a lot, but now that the game's out, it's just swoop.
Well,
but that's okay, because it's the game we're all playing right now anyway, so it's fine.
It's not that we don't have those conversations. It's that we have moved them to our incredible Discord server, because
we definitely
still talk about them there. I was just talking about Star Wars video games in there today as well. Yeah. So we do it. It's just, I think we found a better outlet than on the show.
Yes. And well, have we shaved any time off of the episodes because of it? No.
We're trying.
We've jammed in so much extra just for this one, which is good.
That's right.
Which is good.
With the hot topics, headlines, strategies, and community issues surrounding Star Wars Unlimited, and so much more.
So much more.
Yeah.
There's my
And
life.
The other things that we crammed in, at least for this week, are obviously the spoilers, the cards that we're going to talk about. But it's very apropos, because we're going to see some new cards. We're going to say, hey, this is what we think of these new cards in a vacuum. And then we're going to kind of revisit some of our older predictions or assessments and say, hey, what did we either get right or get wrong? What's something that underperformed or overperformed based on our initial assessments? And so that's going to be a really fun exercise, I think. But before we get to that, we also get to talk about our brand new and improved. We really abused it this week with the choices. Our cave poll of the week.
Yes, abuse is an interesting term to use here, but that is exactly...
I like the word we took advantage of it. But, I mean, that's contextually a bad thing, too. But, like, we really exploited? No. We maximized our polling potential.
There you go.
Yeah, there we go.
That's the proper terminology. That's the kind of stuff that I want to hear. But you're right. Yeah. And essentially, again, to sort of allow for more people to have access to it, because not everybody's on Twitter or whatnot, we hosted it by Straw Poll. Straw Poll also granting us the ability to add as many freaking options in the poll as we want. Yes. And in the past, we have, you know, been hindered by the fact that there's only so much that we can fit into the poll. And a discussion that the three of us have had in the past has also been, well, do we really want to create polls where, you know, we have to put like a Jawa number 8 in there because it appeared once or whatever?
Yeah, we don't want to be limited. Yeah.
But
so we're doing it. We're unlimited.
It's we
polls
are.
Polls unlimited now. Yeah.
But this poll, my friends, is one where I was like, let's really, like you said, take advantage of or maximize our potential when it comes to options.
No, this is what happened. You were like, oh, I can include an image. I can have more than four choices. Now this is pod racing. And then that was literally what you did for the poll.
Yes. Yeah. So for this one, just to allow it to fit on the screen here, the poll for this this cave poll, which is available through our Discord or through our Twitter account. You can find the link for the next one every Sunday. This one was, what is the coolest looking pod racer that participated in the Bunta Eve Classic that was won by Anakin Skywalker? Now, there are 18 options. I'm not going to read through all of them. However, the image is there for those who are interested. And I want to know who you all voted for, because there are 18 really cool options. And when I mean pod racer, I mean the actual vehicle, not the individual doing the racing.
Of course.
Yeah, the horse, not the jockey.
Correct. That is correct. So, Doa, you go first. Which did you vote for?
Well, so first I want to say a lot of people, when we talked about this poll in our Discord, thought that I thought this up because I talk about pod racing all the time. Mm-hmm. But I actually didn't. It was actually you, Flake, that came up with this one. But I was just very happy to see it. I would have come up with, I'm sure I would have come up with it too, had I been thinking about it. But Yeah, I mean, I played a ton of the Podracer game on Nintendo 64, like we all did of this era. And for me, all Darbito, every day, all day. Like the Podracer, so it's got these two swooping sort of engines with like two, you know, rocket boosters on each one, a nice sleek, you know, cockpit to sit in, I guess, or like chariot seat, because it really is chariot racing with rockets, right? But that's one of the reasons why it's awesome, right? So for me, all Darbito, easy choice. Although I always did like the design of Sebulba's Podracer too. You know, maybe it's a bit cliche, but I went with all Darbito.
I kind of wanted to take Sebulba as well, and I didn't, because for the same kind of, I wanted to hipster it a little bit, because Sebulba's is really cool. It's also huge.
Well, he's a solid second. He's a solid second favorite for me.
And for those who once had a subscription to Nintendo Power, if you hit the Z button or the Z button while you're using Sebulba's Podracer in Star Wars Podracer for a Nintendo 64, if you double tap the Z button, he would shoot off a flame flare to his right side of his ship. Little known fact. That's why it was really broken to use Sebulba in that game. Also, I have to ask you, if you played this game, did you have the expansion pack for your N64, that little...
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course. You needed it.
The little graphical boost. You know what I... I had that, and I also had the Rumble Pack, too. So the one that the expansion pack went in the console, the Rumble Pack went in the controller.
Correct.
And I did have both for maximum pod racing.
Now, I was torn between Team Topagalis and Al Darbito as well because of the sleekness, the smoothness of what it looked like. I thought that I wanted to go Team Toe. Team Toe is usually who I took in the video game, but Al Darbito looks like if I was out there shopping for a used pod racer, I would take the Beto. I would take a 2024 Al Darbito for sure. Charmer?
It is a sick one.
All right, so I want to be very clear. None of us had any discussions about this poll, okay?
That's true, yeah.
We posted it, we shared it, we all did our votes in silence. I would like you guys to know that my second favorite is Sebulba. Apparently he is Sebulba second place because it is a very cool design. But I voted for Al Darbito.
Oh!
Wow. Insane.
Because, and you both nailed it. It's sleek. When I saw the design of it, it's also the one I played a ton on N64. It reminds me of a Corvette pod racer. Like there's something sports car-ish about it, but also like I'm a really big purple nerd. Like it's my favorite color. There's a reason I'm always picking Mace Windu's lightsaber whenever I do anything, yada, yada. And it's the purple pod racer, right? So the sports car look, the color purple, everything about it.
It is cool.
But yeah, Flake hit the nail as well, right? It does look like the one that you would buy off the lot, right? Like if you were pod racer shopping, it was the one that looked like, hey, this is something that was professionally built and not put together by, you know, pit droids or whatever over the weekend.
It's just a very pleasing shape to look at when you're driving it too, because you've got this like sort of like inward angle of the slope of the engines and it makes it look like you're going faster. I don't know. I don't know if that's actually the case, but that's what it feels like when you're piloting Al Darbito's pod racer. Weird looking alien. If you look at
it's almost
cool pod racer.
Into the front of the Millennium Falcon in many ways too, right? Because that same angle. Maybe that's
All right.
Just what we all subconsciously love.
So let's get to the results. Again, 18 different options here. So I'm only going to fit the top five, I think, or the top six votes. Ultimately, not in second place. In first place was Sebulba with 16.53% of the vote. Team Topagalis.
Bunch of pod racing normies out there.
Totally, right? Exactly. Yep. These are the people who root for the New England Patriots. Like that.
Need
like,
some more pod racing gatekeeping. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Team Topagalis and Al Darbito both just behind at 18 votes apiece at 14.88%. E.B. Endicott at 9.92%. Anakin Skywalker, the dude who has the smallest whip, but the fastest whip. At 9.09%, and Odie Mandrell at 8.26%. There was one option that got zero votes, and I will ask you if you guys want to figure out who that is before.
I bet I know. I bet I know. He's like the lamest of all the pod racers, which is what's the guy's name? I have to look it up.
If you're thinking of the one that doesn't have that has the rockets behind the cockpit, like that are all together, that's Neva Key, and I feel like that's cheating because that's like just bringing a speeder to the race, right?
I'm gonna guess. I'm looking at the list now. I don't even remember Neva Key being in the game. Was he?
I just never took his pod racer. Yeah.
I'm gonna guess it's Clegg Holdfast because he's got the most boring looking pod racer.
Clegg, in my opinion. Clegg Holdfast with Clegg. 2 votes.
Oh man, I got it wrong. All right,
2 votes. There's
Charmer, can you guess?
I would have guessed Arc Bumpy Roos.
Bumpy Roos.
It looks like a tractor.
Also with 2 votes.
Oh, all right. Some farmers out there.
Yeah. So the pod racer with 0 votes. Poor old Mahonic. The dude with the coolest name.
Mahonic?
Yeah, Mahonic. Mm. I guess Dud Bolt is a pretty cool name. But Ben Quadaneros, I mean, when they're naming this dude, they're like, okay, that guy's got 4 engines. Let's name him something quad is something. And they're like, okay, deal. Ben Quadaneros.
Elon Mack is almost Elon Musk, which is kind of strange.
It is.
I wonder if that's where Elon Musk got his name from. He had a different name before, and then he saw Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace, and he's like, I'm going to use that to create my new name.
And he saw the front of Sebulba's pod racer and he's like, I'm gonna name a website X because this pod racer looks like an X.
Dude, this all like you nailed it. These names are amazing. Gasgano, Dud Bolt, Mars Guo, Rats Tyrell, Arc Bumpy Roos. They already have one with that doesn't have a backstory, but he's got a nickname. Juan Sondage. Bumpy. Yeah.
Why? I wonder. See, that makes me think he's a Wookiee, right? Because if you remember, Chewbacca's family from the Star Wars Holiday Special, his grandfather's name is Lumpy. Itchy, and his son's name is Lumpy. I almost had that wrong. Wow
they have poor names.
His pod racer looks, I think it's Bumpy because the engine drags on the ground.
Okay. Oh, maybe. Does it? I mean, It looks like it would.
Like I said, it looks like a tractor to me. That's why I would have guessed that one got no votes.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move forward here. We got some headlines that we want to approach. Yeah, which
we got to move along.
Yeah, we had this discussion off air, like right before.
Hey, let's keep it short. And pod racing.
And pod racing.
I mean, it's pod racing.
Let me know, and I need to pull out the emergency pack.
That's
I know
on
we're
you.
Moving on, but
you've got
one.
The button okay. today. Yeah, you got all the right. button because I opened my emergency pack the other day, and I got I got a resupply.
Oh, nice!
Yeah, which was that's nice. Right. And I am your father and a Vader saber. Okay, so cool. There was a stream by FFG today. Actually, today being the 17th.
Hours ago.
Yeah, just not too long ago, where it was impromptu. From what I understand, I don't think it was like really scheduled, but we did get to hear from Xander Tabler, the host of the event, as well as Jeremy Zwirn, Darth Zwirn, the senior game designer, was there. Ryan Serrano, who is a game designer as well, but also known as they refer to him as the Rules Admiral.
He's the rules guy.
Rules guy, the rules guru. And they revealed the smuggle mechanic. So for those who are unaware, cards that have smuggle will have an additional cost. Basically, for the cost listed on the smuggle portion, you could play this card out of your resource pool for the smuggle cost, get whatever the smuggle bonus is, if there is one, and then the card is replaced by the top card of your deck as a resource. So resourcing cards early, getting the smuggle value off of it later, pretty cool mechanic in my opinion.
Yeah, it's awesome, and you know, I'm sure some people look at it and be like, oh, it's so expensive, why would I pay that much for this thing? It's like, well, you know, basically it's like getting extra cards in your hand. You know, you're paying that extra cost because you've gotten to use that card every turn as a resource, so you have been using it. And you know, you might even get a little bonus on top of that. We've got like we're going to talk about it, but I think, and you're going to get it at the point in the game where it's like your hand size is getting low. Oh, wait, I have this thing in my resource line that I can use. It's great. I love this mechanic. I think it's so cool. And I hope we get a lot of it that's going to be, you know, I have a feeling a lot of it will be playable in competitive decks, but like I want to use it. I'm excited.
Think it's rad.
I just love the mechanic for so many reasons, but I keep thinking about how it's going to change the way we think about deck building and sideboards. Because there's a lot of stuff that we would dedicate sideboard space to that might be covered or could potentially be covered by Smuggle in the future. And so if you can cram one of or two of, you know, of some silver bullets into your deck, that's, I think, a great way to approach this mechanic. And then just be like, oh, well, I casually have the answer down here. I resourced it turn one.
Yeah, it's pretty great. Let's get to our spoilers. Let's take a look at the cards that may or may not involve the Smuggle mechanic, because some did, some didn't.
Some did indeed, some didn't. But some, like the first one we have here, it is the Cartel Turncoat, a one drop cunning and heroism space unit. It's a 2/3 for one. The stats are already singing to you. It's an underworld vehicle fighter, and it has bounty just printed right on the card. Draw a card. So there's the trade-off for you. Mm-hmm. If you want this really, really overstatted one drop to sort of contest early, the turn, the downside to it is that the bounty gives your opponent a way to draw cards. So I'm trying to find whether this is going to be for control, or is this card more so for an aggro build? Because if you're putting down a 2/3 for one, being able to control that space early on and contest space and pressure space, I don't think that card is going to mean much if a Cartel Turncoat has pushed through 2, 4, 6 potential damage before it's even addressed.
Yeah, this card is fantastic. Imagine playing this in a Greedo in turn one. Like, it's huge. Like, and yeah, sure, if they kill it, they get to draw a card. But like you said, you know, theoretically, you will have done, you know, 2-4 damage to the base by then, or like 2 damage to the base and then also hit one of their units. You know, and then you've got like, okay, so they drew a card. They still need to play it. You know, are they even going to draw a card that's worthwhile? Like, I just think it's great. I think it's a awesome card. And yeah, sure, there's like a drawback to it, but I think a lot of times that drawback is worth the cost of playing, or worth the bonus of getting to play it. I love it. I love this card.
Yeah, you talked about playing this in a Greedo, but I'm just thinking about playing two of these turn
that
one.
Too.
Having
yeah, this
two,
and anything else, really.
2-3 units in space where historically it's harder to get presence. That feels very, very strong. I also want to point out that the bounty does only trigger on defeat or capture. So depending on what you're pairing this with, if it starts to be threatened, right? Maybe you put 2 damage on it for trading with something or whatever, and you just bounce it with a Bright Hope so that you can negate that drawback, or there might be some other mechanics as well. I really feel like this card has a lot of power and a lot of potential, even with the bounty on it. This feels very, very strong, very aggressive. The fact that it's a heroism unit as well goes a long way, because it's going to help trigger a bunch of stuff like For a Cause I Believe In and other relevant things.
Think about
this. This is scary.
Think about this. Pirated Starfighter, the 2/4/2 drop space unit? Mm-hmm. Maybe you start with Cartel Turncoat. The second that it maybe becomes challenged, you can play the Pirated Starfighter, bounce this back, and then just resource it the next turn, right? Like, it's,
you could.
It's a potential if you're very much not wanting to give your opponent a card. But otherwise, I think that the downside for this is perfectly fine. Do you guys remember Zombie Chow or something like that from Hearthstone? It was a 2/3 one drop that when it died, it healed your opponent for 5 health. Yeah, it was that card was played more so as a control card, because you didn't care about your opponent getting health. You more so cared about just dealing with their aggro presence. I'm wondering if this is going to be something similar. I feel like card draw is going to be different than health, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, I actually think it's more of an aggressive card because it's card draw and not health. Because if you're playing aggro, your opponent usually has more cards in hand than you anyway. What's one more? And this is already a game where they get to draw 2 a turn. You're never going to be in a position where giving them one more card matters, unless the card that they top deck from this is like the card they were looking for. Outside of that, in terms of just raw numbers, getting one extra card is not going to be a big deal when your opponent is throwing, you know, 2-3 space units in pairs or whatever, turn one, followed by, I know Jeremy on the the live stream mentioned, like, hey, you could play two of these turn one and then drop red three turn two. That's scary.
That is gross.
Yep.
All right.
I mean, I would put this in my Sabine Cunning deck like today, you know, if I could. It would absolutely go in there instantly. Yeah, I think it's going to be a great aggro tool.
And I would hate it.
And a good board control tool too, in a control sense. I agree with you, Flake. I think it's got usages in both formats. So yeah, great.
All right, next up, who wants to slap a name on the next one?
I will slap this one.
What?
So
slap it.
I will slap this into my resource zone, which will make sense in a moment. The next card that was spoiled is Vigilant Pursuit Craft. This is a 5-cost Vigilance Space Unit. Has a 3/5 stat line with vehicle and transport tags. Has the Sentinel keyword, so it's a 3/5 Sentinel in space. But it also has Smuggle. Now, the Smuggle cost is 7 and Vigilance. Now, that's important because they did mention on the broadcast that the aspect assignments for your Smuggle costs are still relevant. So if you're not playing Vigilance, you'll still have to pay the tax when you play this as Smuggle. That will become relevant when we talk about some other cards revealed later. But this is, I think, a really strong limited card. It is a common, and having a 3/5 Sentinel for space on a single aspect is good. And then being able to resource it early and then pull something out in a pinch, that is, to me, where you get the most value with Smuggle, is when you have no other options. Yeah, I'm willing to overpay if it keeps me alive. And something that has Sentinel, that's a very important keyword for maybe stopping that last attack that would kill you to get you to the next turn, whatever the case may be. So I think this will be a really strong limited card.
Tend to agree. I don't see this playing constructed where patrol craft exists. That's my only comment on it. But I do like it in limited.
Yeah, I don't have a ton to add to that. I think it should be great in that sense. Again, limited, you know, where you're a lot of times towards the end of a game of limited, you're going to be top decking a little bit, which is, you know, not as bad in this game because you draw 2 cards per turn. But just being able to play this out, you know, late game is potentially like backbreaking for your opponent. So, yeah, I think I agree. I think it'll be a great limited card. Less so in constructed.
Ooh. All right, Doa, you get the next one. This is a card that I really, really like.
All right. Me too. This is exciting. It's an uncommon, and it's one of the Bad Batch. It's a Crosshair, who is Command Villainy. And isn't this the one? Maybe he's not part of the Bad Batch. He's the one that actually like went through with the Order 66 stuff, right? Like, well, he's the one that actually got affected by it, kinda.
He's kind of. Yeah, kind of. So he's part of the Bad Batch, but he is one of the people that he does still continue to follow orders, and he doesn't immediately flip sides after Order 66, right? Because he's still not necessarily even affected by the chip as much, but also just believes in following orders. Like, he's a soldier. That's why I love the subtext here. It's literally Crosshair following orders. So this is very on the nose.
Well, it's a Command Villainy. Cost 4. It's a 2/6 Imperial Clone Trooper. Clone. Ooh. There's a new that's a new keyword, isn't it?
Do we have any
clones in
yes, on Wolf.
Oh, okay. So we do have one. All right. But this is another indication that might be something to keep an eye on as deck building continues. But anyway, it's got an action in a bracket, so it doesn't need to exhaust to use the first action on this card. Pay 2. This unit gets +1/+0 for the phase. And I believe you can do it as many times as you can pay for, right? Because it doesn't require exhausting. It is that bracket with the colon there. And then it also has a second action, exhaust it. This unit deals damage equal to his power to an enemy ground unit. So I like this a lot. It takes multiple actions to get there. He's got 6 health, though, so he's pretty durable. But it's kind of like, you know, he's a sniper, right? So you're loading up this big shot, and then you're taking out something across the board. I feel like it's very flavorful. Great art, looks very cool, and I think it could find some very interesting uses in control decks as a removal option that you just kind of power up over the course of the turn. Very, very, very neat.
Oh,
I like it a lot.
I love this. Have you ever seen this is going to be such a reach. Have you ever seen the movie The Irishman, where there's that scene in The Irishman where Al Pacino is playing... my God, leader of the Teamsters. I forgot. You know who I'm talking about. Oh my God.
Never seen it.
Jimmy
Sorry.
Hoffa.
Jimmy Hoffa.
I have no idea.
Sorry, I'm a
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, I couldn't believe I forgot.
Worker adjacent person. So
he's,
yeah.
He's in court and somebody pulls out a gun, right? And he charges the guy with the gun, and then and everybody in the courtroom is applauding him. And keep in mind, he's the defendant, and he's like holding court. He's like, remember, if it's a knife, you run away, but you always charge a gun. You run after it, you charge it. And this is how I feel like it, because if you've got crosshair on the board and your opponent has their action, he's like +2 or +1. I'll tap two to +1. And you're like, okay, what's my action? And then passes back to them. Another +1. You know he's charging up the rifle. He's getting it down. He's aiming down sight. At a certain point, you're like, am I taking 4 damage to face for nothing? Is my unit taking 4 damage for nothing? Or do I have to charge at the guy and attack him before he charges his gun up more? I don't know why I made that little thing. But ultimately, crosshair to me is like having first strike without having to worry about the clapback if you don't kill the thing. It's just, I'll just tap it and deal my damage. This card is nuts. I really think that this card is bananas. Imagine slapping Entrench on this. Holy crap. Like, any kind of bonus on this is huge. Entrench, anything, frankly, that will keep it alive. If you put Entrench on this, this thing taps for 5 damage directed and has a 9 health bar that you're, like... You just let Crosshair sit in the back while the other stuff, you know, tickles the life total. This is just going to snipe anything that decides to make an appearance. This card's great.
The card, all right, there are two sides, and I'll try to speed through this because I know we're supposed to go fast, but this is the card I was most excited about talking about. First, super surprised this is an uncommon. This could very easily be a rare in terms of power level. This is a very powerful card for both constructed and especially for limited. The reason it's powerful in constructed is that even though it has an underwhelming attack power, when you're paying 4 for something, getting, you know, 2 attack power is not that great. Traditionally, it better do a bunch of other stuff like Jabba, also have a ton of health, or just give you some sort of long-term value. That's what Crosshair is doing. He costs 4, so you don't have to worry about him being taken by Traitorous. He has 6 health, so you don't have to worry about him immediately being hit by Takedown. You do still have to have some sort of board presence to protect yourself from cards like Power of the Dark Side. But the real reason that I love this card is that even without knowing much else about what's going to be revealed, like just kind of based on what we've seen from this set, it's very... a good thematic fit for the set. And what I mean by that is that this is a card that screams, as Doa said, you want to put upgrades on it. And this is, I think, going to be a set where upgrades matter. We've already seen it with the bounty stuff and things like that. So this is going to be one of those cards that's going to pair very well with a number of things that I expect to be in the set just based on the flavor of everything we've seen. I also love the flavor of, yes, he can shoot things without being hit back, but also specifically just ground units as well. I think that was a very nice balance touch, but also flavor touch. I love so much about this card from design all the way to power. I also think that we haven't seen everything, and I think that we are going to see some sort of counterplay for this, because right now with everything that's revealed, he just seems too easy to protect. Like I said, all of the existing removal, because he's also outside of cost range for like calculated lethality and things like that. So I suspect that we're going to see some other removal that deals with him outside of just Vanquish. Obviously Vanquish exists, but there's got to be something where you're punishing folks for just like, I'm going to play Crosshair and put 2 Entrench on him, and then you never have a ground unit again. You know what
Power
I mean?
Power of the Dark Side.
Yeah. Power of the Dark Side Vanquish. But it does, you're right, it does circumvent Takedown. Next one is, I'm super happy about this. The card doesn't impress me that much, but everything else about it kind of does. It is a 1-cost aggression upgrade. It's the Hotshot DL-44 Blaster. This is the blaster that Han Solo used to shoot Greedo, believe it or not. So the text says, attached to a non-vehicle unit. Okay, easy peasy. It gives +2 attack, +0 health. It's an item, a weapon. That's all you need to know. However, you could smuggle this bad boy for 3 cost plus a cunning. And it says, when you are playing this as a smuggle, attack with the attached unit. So it's kind of a little bit of the quick draw kind of kablammo. It doesn't give you that first strike ability. However, it does surprise an opponent to a degree. It's kind of like a fleet lieutenant or something like that, or an imperial lieutenant. Like you play it, it gives +2, you attack with it. That's what the part of it that doesn't necessarily impress me too much, because a fleet lieutenant does much better than this, ultimately. But what I do really like about it is the Sin City-esque artwork on it. Very dark and shadowy and gritty. That's so my assessment.
What I was actually comparing this to, you're right, Fleet Lieutenant obviously makes this look less impressive, but you have to remember Fleet Lieutenant is also restricted by unit type. Can only be rebels, for example. This is any unit. The other thing is you get that +2 permanently. So when I was looking at this card, I was comparing it to Surprise Strike. So Surprise Strike, the event is you pay 2 and you get to attack with a unit and it gets +3/+0 for the turn. So when you're smuggling this, you pay 1 more and get 1 less attack, but you get a permanent +2 on the unit. So you get that extra damage in, and anything that wants to deal with it now is probably trading, you know, rather unfavorably. So this is a card that I think is going to be very, very good for aggressive decks, because, as we were just talking about, usually the aggressive decks are the ones running out of cards. So if you're looking to smuggle stuff and extend your hand, this is a great way to do it. And it's in aggression, it's in cunning. I also really, really like this card because even as a one drop, you can generate a lot of pressure. If you start with like a Stormtrooper and then this, you can swing for 5. Like, that's nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, if it stays alive with that.
If
that
it stays alive.
But it does demand a response. You know, you're trading a card for a card if they have to use something they wouldn't normally use on a Stormtrooper to take it out. That could be good. I like that I don't even need to be playing aggression to put this in my deck, you know? I can just plan on resourcing it when I see it and then smuggling it when I need it in a deck that has cunning. I think they talked about in the live stream double cunning. Otherwise, I mean, anything that has cunning at all. I mean, you could run this in Chewbacca, you know, you could run this in Cunning Vigilance, right? And you just resource it and then you pop it out when you need it. And, you know, imagine doing that, right? Imagine, you know, putting this on Chewbacca, for instance, and suddenly he's a 5/5 and he's ready when he's hitting things. And, you know, you can do some fun things with this.
No cunning and then just pay 5.
That's also true. Yeah.
Like, I know you're laughing, yeah, but if you're trying to bamboozle somebody and you just catch them with the, like, oh, by the way, here's 2 extra damage for the lethal that you weren't totally counting right on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you don't have to attack a unit. That is one of the interesting things about this card is a lot of the things that have, like, surprise attack actions, you don't get to attack bases. So this is kind of significant that it's just, like, attack with the unit, you know? Yeah. So, that's a surprise 2 damage out of nowhere, too.
I could lost games to that of just like, okay, I'm going to take priority here because I could survive this attack and then I could deal with it. But, you know, anyway. All right, who's next? Who wants the next one?
Who is next? I'll go. Wait, I'll go next. I'll go next. Whatever. All right. So, I want you to go next because I want to do the one after this. Is that okay? Or did you really want to
I'll go.
Okay. I'm tired. Sorry.
Bendu. All right. Oh, the next card that was revealed was Privateer Crew. This is a 2-cost command ground unit. It is a 2/2 stat line with only the underworld tag for the unit. It does, however, have smuggle of 6, I believe, is the cost with command.
Yep.
Now, the interesting bit here is it's just a 2-cost 2/2, but if you smuggle it and you pay that 6, when it's played, you give it 3 experience tokens. So you can pay 6 to have it enter as a 5/5. So if you're coming from like Magic, for example, it's almost like a kicker cost when you're playing it from smuggle, but you get that extra benefit. Now, I really like this because, again, we're talking about the kind of synergy throughout the set. All those experience tokens are also going to count as upgrades for things like calculated lethality, which would, once this is on the board, still kill this because it's still a 2-drop. Even though you smuggle it for 6, it's a 2-drop. So that's a great answer for a card like this.
Can confirm. No notes. I like cards that have utility later, you know, or have ways that you can sort of, like you said, if I can have a card that I can play out of the graveyard in Magic, that means that I can play it twice. Same thing with the adventure cards. There's always an advantage you have when you have multiple options and times that you can play a card.
Yeah, it's going to be good. I think there's another one that looks good in Limited as well. To pop a 5/5 out of your resources late in the game in a Limited match, I think that's going to feel pretty good. So I'll be looking to pick this one up in a draft or, you know, include it in Sealed if I'm playing green.
Well, now's the time, Doa, for the next one.
There you go. All right. This one's very exciting. This probably generated the most buzz, I think, out of the cards that were revealed today. It costs one. It's command. It's Timely Intervention. It's a tactic. Play a unit from your hand. Give it ambush for this phase. It also has Smuggle of 2 and Command. So a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, it's Energy Conversion Laboratory in my deck. And it kind of is. And, you know, you add one to the cost of whatever you're playing to play it. If you Smuggle it, you're adding 2 to the cost. Either way, you know, that's a very strong ability, as we've seen, you know, Energy Conversion Lab be kind of the main playable rare base in set one. So clearly Ambush is very strong. It lets you cheat an action essentially by playing and attacking with something, even though you can only attack a unit. But it's I do think it's not quite as game breaking as people expect it is going to be, because it takes up 3 card slots in your deck. You're going to find times where you're not going to want to have, you know, multiples of these in your hand, and you're like, yeah, I can resource one, but you know, you're going to be drawing more. You're maybe not going to be drawing the best time. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a great card, but I think the cost of taking up 3 spots in your deck to give other cards in your deck ambush when you might need ambush is strong, but it's not like game breaking, like I've seen some people be concerned about already with the knee jerk internet reaction. So I want to temper that a second. I think it's a very good card. I don't think it's like ban worthy, basically, you know, it's not 3 ECLs.
Well, it's been out for 3 hours.
It's been revealed for a couple hours. Yeah, I know. Definitely. But I've already seen people be like, oh no, the game is over. You know,
yeah, so I think that it's a very strong card. I do, however, am ready to concede based on what today's episode is about, which is overestimation, underestimation. I'm totally prepared to walk myself back and think that I overestimated this card. However, there's no downside to it when you can just resource it and play it later for not that much of a tax. You're just paying one extra on top of whatever it is. So I think that this card is probably at least a 2 of main board for many, just because it, a lot of the times if you're playing this, I mean, sometimes you just want to, it'll even pay for itself if you can use this onto a DJ Death Star, like a super laser tech, to just cheat it out, get it to crash into something, get that resource back in another way. Who knows? I think it's strong. I think it's definitely very, very, very playable, but I think it's only strong and playable because of the smuggle mechanic.
Yeah, I think the smuggle mechanic is an important piece to this because that's the only way where you negate essentially 2-for-1-ing yourself, because that's what's happening here. You're not just playing this, you're playing this and a card. So you're playing another card, you're paying a resource tax, and you're expending this as a resource, you know, likely from hand or from smuggle. Either way, like that's a lot of stuff to just get rid of one thing. And while that can be a very powerful play, I, you know, would love to use this on Rook, for example. You're already in command anyway. He loves ambush. He's a frequent target when I'm playing my conversion lab. That is a good play, but it does have an opportunity cost, and I do think that is going to be harsher than people anticipate. I think that this is going to be good enough to see play. I don't think that this will end up being oppressive unless there are too many things in this set that can also take advantage of it, like a Rook, right? If we get a bunch of very similar units to that
Avenger,
then
is that the playing, one that when
how
you,
much would Avenger be costing with this again?
Well, 10. And I think that, like, if you're playing this in Palpatine, like Palpatine Blue, you're not afraid to get to 10 because you
sure.
might. But this could
listen. If you get to 10 and you play your bomb and another card, you deserve to win in my mind.
But
though.
But that's if that's the winning play, then you'd make it, right? Like the amount of times
Rook
I've been
7.
At, what's that?
You know, Rook is 7 if you smuggle this out.
Right.
Like, I mean, it's sure he's going to kill a unit right away, but isn't Vanquish one less than that already?
But with Avenger, you're killing two things and you have a nine drop on the board. Because Avenger is the when played, they have to power the force themselves or power the dark side themselves. And then you attack with it and they have to make another decision, right?
I think that sounds like a great play. I don't know if that level of play is going to be the average for this card. No.
I agree. I'm just thinking pie in the sky craziness here. Yeah. Like, I want to get...
It'll be a fun card for sure.
Well, yeah. And like I said, I stand by it. If you get to that point in the game and you make that play, like, that's a late game combo power play. You deserve to win at that point, in my mind.
Yeah. Out of all the different Palpatine-esque you deserve to win when this happens plays, this is just adding to the pile things. I hope I get there.
I have one other thing I want to highlight just real quick before we move on to the last card, because this is the last card with Smuggle, and I wanted to fit this bit in just to have people thinking about it, right? One of the things about the Smuggle mechanic is that when you Smuggle a card, you also take the top card of your deck and you put it into play as a resource to replace itself. And I do like this because it means you're not losing tempo on your resources. That doesn't feel good. It's essentially land destructioning yourself. But we've already seen in the set one meta some people catching on to the fact that milling is a very viable strategy. And if you're smuggling stuff out and it's replacing itself from the top of your deck, you're also speeding up that win con for your opponent. So as we look at these Smuggle cards, I do think that there's going to be an element also of taking into account whether or not you're going to deck yourself, right? This is already something that people who have toyed around with Han Solo, you know, they have to consider with him as a leader. This takes that to another level. That's also another thing I wanted to mention, which is Han Solo and, you know, Lando and some of those other cards are also kind of getting a second life with this new Smuggle mechanic. So a lot of stuff to consider going forward, but yeah, the replacing itself is nice, but also potentially a drawback when we start talking about like eating away at folks' decks as a win condition.
Hey, also the card smuggling compartment doesn't have smuggle on it.
That's true. That's because it's the compartment for smuggling.
Oh, that's right.
The compartment for you to put the stuff you're smuggling in, and smuggling the compartment smuggle mechanic. Because it will put stuff in that you can play with Smuggle.
All right, last card.
I feel like this is the point where I need to pull out the emergency pack.
This might be a good option.
I never have an emergency pack. I did. It's been sitting in front of me in my resource. I'm just going to open it. Oh. This is an organized play pack that I saved from last week.
Do you hear that? Listen closely. You hear that?
What?
That is the sound of Babu Freak agreeing with you that you need to open that pack. Now keep in mind where the camera is aligned at your face and just above your microphone. That's perfect right there. There we go. All right, what do we
Oh, it's another I Am Your Father. I have a lot of these. It is another Moff, Admiral Mahdi. I have like five of each of these, and it is a Bossk.
Oh.
But not a foil Bossk. Bossk is still a good pull, though.
That's
not
a very good pull.
Altart Bossk. Nice.
Very good.
Cool.
There you go. That is a
good, decent emergency pack. Yeah.
That is your emergency pack brought to you by no one yet, but it might be you. Let us know.
It could be. it could be brought to you by something. Yeah.
All right. Last card. Let's get to this. It is a one cost event. Single aspect vigilance called Unexpected Escape. This is a trick for blue. It says, exhaust a unit. You may rescue a captured card guarded by that unit. What I like about this is two words that I guess count as rules, which is rescue and guarded. So now we know that if you free a captured unit, it is called rescuing them. And also, if somebody is holding on to a captive, that card is guarded by that card. I don't even know if that makes any relevance, but it is part of it. It's part of the vernacular now. It's a one cost sideboard hero is what it is.
I think that this actually has a lot of value in limited. It's only an uncommon, and just paying one to exhaust any unit, because it's not non-leader, it's just any unit, right? Mm-hmm. And I know before we started recording, we were having a spirited discussion about using Leia to, you know, tap down problematic leaders. Just paying one to exhaust a unit can be very relevant, and the other stuff is just a bonus. I think that this card, especially in limited, where you might not have removal right away, but you need to buy yourself time, could be a really big deal.
That's such a very good point. I didn't even think about that. You know what? The first thing I thought about was exhaust a unit that is that has a captive. I didn't even see the period there. That's just exhaust the unit. Everything else is gravy. One cost exhaust the unit. It's like Asteroid Sanctuary, eat your heart out. This is just superior.
Yeah. And again, so I'm very happy as well that you pointed out this is a trick. As somebody who is very excited to see what tools Jabba gets in this set, and because I have a feeling I'm going to end up playing a Jabba deck, I love getting new tools. This being a trick, if you've got Jabba, it's zero. It's literally just the action because he's going to reduce the cost by one. And so you're just like, hey, that's exhausted, buddy.
Villainy? What about a villainy vigilance Jabba leader?
I don't think that he'll get vigilance. I think that if he feels like he has to be cunning, and if he's not, he would have to be command, right? Because he's like leading the underworld. But I do like the idea of still playing like a cunning vigilance control style deck with a bunch of tricks. I think that sounds really fun. It's already something I was experimenting with Thrawn anyway. And I could even still seeing like you could play Thrawn Vigilance and just play the Jabba suite with tricks and whatever, and then include this as well.
And all that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, any last words?
No. Perfect. They were cool cards. I'm looking forward to seeing more. Does this mean spoiler season is officially underway?
It's got to be.
I guess so.
They keep saying spoiler season hasn't happened yet, but now I feel like we got a bunch of it. So it's got to be open season now. I want to see more.
I want that card that Jeremy's Worm was talking about. That's the card that I wish that we can spoil.
They said next week, didn't they?
Is that when it kicks off?
I think he said in the stream like they were going to show it next week, or one of the three of them said that after he said it.
All right.
It's not spoiler season, but the leaves are turning. Right.
Oh, okay. All right. We're getting there. We're getting close to spoiler season. I can smell it in the air.
All right. Okay. It is time, friends, for the main topic of the episode. The mailbag will be its own separate thing, as we typically are. Basically, episodes go too long and our mailbag goes too short. So we're going to have our mailbag as a separate entity on Mondays. So on Mondays, you can check that out on noon EST. We will get to more of your questions as they pile in. But the topic du jour this time is one of reflection and self-evaluation, friends. Because it's not about evaluating the cards. It's about evaluating ourselves as people, as prognosticators, as evaluators. And part of that, friends, is the fact that, hey, we were wrong. And it's important to admit when you are wrong. So let's go through our underestimated and overestimated cards that we made our judgments on before getting a hold of them or playing against them, and here we are completely wrong. I will take the reins on this one. I will be the first to admit that I'm human. I make mistakes, and one of the mistakes I made was underestimating a card called For a Cause I Believe In. This was a card that I didn't think would punch me in the face as much as it has in the past month.
Good.
It's a card that I genuinely thought would maybe be a two, or on a good day it would hit for three. But the reliable fours that I've had to eat because of this, to the point where my regional governors have been basically targeting this card mid-game. And also, it's basically what I've been playing around more than anything as Aiden or as Palpatine. By the way, I'm an Aiden guy now, just so everyone knows. Palpatine is still taking a sabbatical. I was dead wrong about this card. I thought that this card was not going to be as A, strong, or B, prevalent as it was. So I'm going to take it on the chin. For a cause I believe in, I was wrong about. I underestimated this card.
So I went back, and I don't think we should each talk about all of our cards too much, but I did go back and look at the document where we each rated every single card in the expansion on a A to F scale, and you did give it an A. So you're just saying, like, you thought it'd be good, but you didn't think it would be as extremely good. It is definitely an S-tier card, but I don't feel like you got it too wrong as an A.
So that evaluation, by the way, Doa, that was after I had... because Sabine was running wild when we did that list. So I had been bumping up against this. But I think when this card was revealed initially, like spoiled, I had it in my mind as like a C-minus kind of thing. Wow. Yeah, I thought, I'm like, I'd rather pay three for a unit that threatens or a removal or direct damage or that. And this is direct damage, but it's not guaranteed. So I was like, meh. But you know what? It's just out of hand damage. And I underestimated the sheer value of out of hand damage like that.
Fair enough.
You know, let's do all of our underestimated ones. So,
Okay.
Yeah, Doa, sure. What were you short on?
Oh, my underestimated one was actually Vigilance, which I gave a D because I thought that it wasn't really going to be any good until we started seeing double Vigilance decks pop up. I was like, all right, Vigilance is okay, but it's not like, is it really worth paying 6/4? And what I've seen lately with people putting Vigilance in decks that just have a single Vigilance aspect is that, yeah, even paying 6/4, because you're going to see it mostly in control decks or exclusively in control decks, I should say, it's absolutely still very good. Being able to pay 6 to heal 5 to your base and, you know, do one of the other 3 effects is actually very worth it. So, yeah, definitely not D. It was a provisional D because I think it's still a good card. I just didn't think it'd be good until like I said, the double blue decks became more available. But I'm wrong. It was available now. Vigilance is a great card, even if you're only running one Vigilance aspect in your leader and base combo.
It's the one thing that I had to sort of digest about these legendary events was I thought that any time you had to pay over the top, pay the tax, that the card was just bad. Wrong. I play 3 of these in my Iden deck, and I'm very happy to do so.
Karn.
Charmbaka.
Charmer.
Underestimated card.
The card that I wanted to talk about that I underestimated was Bright Hope. So this is a card I believe I had originally rated as a B, and I also remember saying like good things about it when it was revealed, but I didn't understand at the time how important the space arena was going to be and how imbalanced things were going to be in set one, at least as far as, you know, the number of ground units versus the number of space units. And it turns out this is probably the best 4-cost space unit in set one. It's very, very good. You want to play it anytime you're running Command Heroism. The Sentinel is really important. And when I say anytime, I mean, like, you're running this if you're running Control. You're running this if you're running, like, the Aggressive. Like, in Aggressive Sabine, you're still running this. In fact, it's probably better in Command Sabine as an aggressive card because you can help get protection for your space units, right? So if you play a red 3 and then you use this to protect it, that's important. But also, if you're using cards like the Spec Force, where, you know, it's a 1-drop 2/2, but you get rid of Sentinel on something, bouncing that back and using it as a combat trick as opposed to a body is also really, really important at times. So I have found myself falling in love with this when I am playing Command, and I underestimated it.
This card got dropped on me against a really great player that I played against at Harry Tarantula, who kept dropping this on and picking up like Akbar and replaying Akbar and doing all kinds of nonsense. And this thing also just eats TIE interceptors. Like, it just, like, if there's a TIE interceptor on the board, it'll just show up and be like, yeah, well, you come at me, bro. Like, it's just annoying as hell. I agree. Let's wheel it back. Let's do a little snake draft action here. So Charmer, you can give us your overestimated card.
The card that I think I overestimated the most was Count Dooku. Historically, if you have a card that is removal on a body, it tends to be very good. And when we saw Takedown revealed, obviously Takedown looked like premier removal. Turns out that is correct because you can get rid of leaders with it. I saw Count Dooku and I said, hey, this is basically like Takedown, but you get a body. Now, granted, it's 4 health instead of 5, which is very relevant, but it's still doable. And then you get a 5/4 shielded. Like, what's not to like? And then the problem that the problem was that I wasn't considering the quality of what other 7 drops were or the kinds of plays that you could make on turn 7. And Count Dooku, you just you don't feel nearly as good when you play him on turn seven because you're likely killing something smaller than him. And then you get the 5/4 shielded, which by itself, other than the defeat, isn't immediate value. So like comparing that to a Vader just feels awful, right? The Vader is going to be a 5/6 ambush. So he's going to hit the board, likely take something out, leave a body behind, and produce 1 to 2 extra units as well. Whereas Dooku's like, I get rid of one of your small ones and I've got the 5/4 shielded. It just doesn't feel great. And the problem is that Vigilance already has so many other good removal tools that he feels almost like a waste, right? A lot of the things that you want to get rid of with his ability, you probably killed the turn or two before with Takedown or Vigilance anyway. So
good point.
I think he's still very good and limited, and I try to make him work occasionally, but he has drastically underperformed compared to what I thought he was going to do when he was revealed.
I think it's a card that's going to get better over time. I think the fact that he's forced is going to matter down the road eventually when more of that stuff kind of comes around, inevitably. I think his ability is still good. A 5/4 shield is still good, but I agree. I mean, when you compare him to other 7 drops, like the only place I really see him is in like the Casino Han, you know, 7's deck where you can throw him out really early. And in that case, he is good. Otherwise, like I've seen him in Palpatine sometimes too, because he's a good body in that deck. But overall, he's going to be the one that you resource, and Vader's going to be the one that you play. So, yeah, I agree. I was a little bit disappointed by Dooku as well. I expected more, but that's not to say he won't be better down the road. I think he will be.
Until you have had your Dooku hit the board, remove a unit, only to be removed by your opponent's Dooku, then have you lived. Because that is a thing that happened.
It's a very good point.
Yeah. I will say that Dooku has won me a game on Iden, because Iden would basically, I was dead on board, and then I created my Iden on turn 7, crashed it into something to bring it down. Dooku mm-hmm. came in, killed it, and then I had a point of healing, a full board of good stuff, and then that kind of changed the game. Your overestimated unit, Doa.
Mine was Rook. The green, you know, 5/4, 3/6 shielded. When this unit deals combat damage to a non-leader unit while attacking, defeat that unit. On paper, you know, it looks like a great card. It's shielded, small attack, but who cares? Because it just kills things that aren't leaders. But I underestimated the strength of cards with more immediate effects. And sure, you can like ECL this guy out, but in a lot of decks that run that, you're probably not going to be running Rook, it seems like. I feel like I haven't seen it a ton, Boba Fett. I haven't seen it, you know, even though it does run command. It just seems like for whatever reason, people are finding other 5 drops that they would rather play. And you're not going to play this guy really without ECL because he hits the board. It's like, okay, he's probably not going to go anywhere because you can't take him down. He's got a shield. But then it just takes so long, I feel like, to get him going, like a whole turn, basically, that the cost is just too high between paying 5, waiting a turn to really get that benefit, especially when you're going to play a leather. It's kind of like what Charmer just said, where by the time he's able to attack into something and kill it, you have other cards that could have probably killed it sooner. So, yeah, I'm surprised. I rated it an A, and I don't think it's a bad card. I would still rate it like a B or a C maybe, but it's not quite as impactful as I thought it was going to be.
I tend to agree. This is a card I think that with ECL is an S tier card because of ECL bringing this out, ordering your triggers where it'll attack, deal damage, then gain its shield. So it still has some survivability. But when, like you said, Doa, if you have to just plant it and wait for it to grow, like that's, no one ain't got time for that. I still think it's good. I just think that without ECL, by the way, ECL was on my list of had initially was my most underestimated card. I still had it high, but not that high. So, but then I just took it out because it was a base, and I didn't think that. I thought bases might be cheating, but
I think it's just hard to find a time to run him when Steadfast Battalion exists.
Yes, you know? Yeah, you're
that
not wrong.
That card is just nearly always going to be better because it's going to come out usually when your leader is active. It's going to be swinging for 7. With ECL, which is what we're talking about using here. It's got Overwhelm, so you're going to get a little bit of damage in there. It's probably still going to live because it's got 5 health. So, yeah, I think it's a, you know, I think Rook is a cool card. I think he's just kind of overshadowed. Yeah.
All right. Well, my last card, which is my last overestimated card, was one that you heard me super pumping up. You got to pump it up, which was the AT-AT Suppressor. It's an 8-drop. It's an 8-8. When played, exhaust all ground units. I thought that this was just the end-all. Once you get to 8, it's just lockdown time. You start dropping your big boys. You freeze things. Unfortunately, that this isn't even the best walker that you want. That I think the reinforcement walker was one that I had even lower. Then I realized, holy crap, that my underestimated card was also in contention was the reinforcement walker. In terms of stabilizing and what it does, incredible. I'd rather have that than this. And ultimately, the 8-8 and exhaust all ground units, it's like you drop it, you exhaust everything. That's your whole turn. They'll just play the rest of their turn or take initiative and then start firing back at you the turn after. And yeah, you got an 8-8 on the board, but if they're swarming you, this doesn't do what you think it does. I would much rather pay 8 for a super laser blast and just hit the reset button against a scary board. This is a win more card like crazy.
Yep. Don't have anything to add to that. Yeah.
Charmer, you want to crap on my AT-AT suppressor?
I mean, no, I don't want to crap on it. I think that ultimately you landed on the right assessment, which is that the reinforcement walker gives you immediate value one way or the other. And while the other one, I mean, you still get that value of exhausting units. You also spent 8. So your turn is basically over. And you'd better make sure that exhausting all those units was exactly what you needed. And that also, hopefully you got your opponent low enough where you're going to play that. And then you're going to take initiative and swing for 8 and get you the victory. Cause there's not much else that you're going to do to follow that play up really.
Also, for those who are looking at the artwork, it has been basically completely stopped by a power line. So like
I was gonna say, yeah,
it has no clue what it's doing. It's, you know,
it does seem to be surrounded. Yep.
Even the T-Rex in Jurassic Park ran through the fallen tree to chase the Jeep. This is just like, what do we do here?
Okay, but Max like traveled across the country to see Powerline in the Goofy movie. So
oh, that's true.
Yeah. Dad, I mean, the perfect cast. Yeah. Remember that?
At the end.
Yes, I do.
At the end of the day, I look at this card and I'm like, well, that's okay. No AT-AT has ever run into trouble being surrounded by cables, so it's fine. But yeah, I think when I look at this card now, I'm like, all right, give me a leader somewhere down. Give me a general Veers leader somewhere down the line that like lets me build like an AT-AT or a Walker deck, right? Like whatever all the Walker cards that come out, you know, AT-STs, AT-ATs, Walker Texas Ranger, like all the Walker cards. Give me a Veers leader that like turns those on in a way that like we don't have. That'd be great.
All right. Last thing I'll say about this Veers leader, your vehicles all have overwhelm and +1/+0. That's his leader ability.
So it's like Wedge, but instead of ambush, you get overwhelm.
Bingo.
Cool.
All right. That is it, ladies and gentlemen, our most overrated and underrated revisions of after playing the game for a solid month and a half. Mailbag this week, separate show. So come back on Monday and we will dig into that. So we have no way to lead into or out of this other than the fact that, hey, thank you so much for tuning into another.
Listening.
Yeah. Join the Discord. Hey, come on over. Come on over. Charmer.
Baby.
Charmer. That's it. I have no way to lead into anything here, so this is all on you. To wish everyone well and then invite them back on Monday.
I was waiting for you to say hit the thing or anything, but I guess beep boop. May the force be with you.